appeared. Polly was proud that she hadn't asked him if he was having a good time. She was always anxious about their relationship and could tell that her need for reassurance was beginning to irritate him. The men had set out tables and benches in a smaller room, and Laurie's friends were handing out mugs of soup to the waiting guests. Eleanor and Polly took a tray each. Eleanor was enjoying herself immensely. She was showing off, flirting with the old men and reveling in the attention. Then there were bannocks and platters of mutton and salt beef. Bannocks and flesh, Laurie called it. Polly was vegetarian, and the mounds of meat at the end of her fingertips as she carried the plates from the kitchen made her feel a little queasy. There was a sense of dislocation about the whole event. It was being on the ship for 13 hours the night before and spending all day in the open air. The strangeness of the evening light. Eleanor being so manic. Polly sipped tea and nibbled on a piece of wedding cake and thought she could still feel the rolling of the ship under her feet. When the meal was over, she and Marcus helped to clear the tables. Then the band began to play again, and despite her protests, she was swung into an eightsome reel. She found herself in the centre of the circle, being passed from man to man and then spinning. Laurie's father was her partner. He had his arms crossed and braced, and the force of the movement almost lifted her from her feet. She'd thought of him as an elderly man and hadn't expected him to be so strong. There was a fleeting and astonishing moment of sexual desire. When the music stopped, she saw that she was trembling. It was the physical effort and an odd excitement. There was no sign of Eleanor or Marcus, and she went outside for air. It must have been nearly 11 o'clock, but it was still light. Laurie said that in Shetland, this was called the simmer dim, the summer dusk. So far north, it never really got dark in June, and now the shore was all grey and silver. Polly spent her working life analysing folk tales, and she could understand how Shetlanders had come to create the trows, the little people with magical powers. It must be a result of the dramatic seasons and the strange light. It occurred to her that she might write a paper on it. There might be interest from Scandinavian academics. From the hall behind her came the sound of the band finishing another tune, laughter, and the clink of crockery being washed up in the kitchen. On the beach below, a couple sat, smoking. Polly could see them only as silhouettes. Then a little girl appeared on the shore, apparently from nowhere. She was dressed in white, and the low light caught her and she seemed to shine. The dress was high-waisted and trimmed with lace, and she wore white ribbons in her hair. She stretched out her arms to hold the skirt wide and skipped across the sand, dancing to the music in her head. As Polly watched, the girl turned to her and, very serious, curtsied. Polly stood and clapped her hands. She looked around her to see if there were any other adults watching. She hadn't noticed the girl in the party earlier, but she must be there with her parents. Perhaps she belonged to the couple sitting below her. But when she turned back to the tide line, the girl had vanished, and all that was left was a shimmering reflection of the rising moon in the water. Chapter 2. When the party ended, they couldn't sleep. Caroline and Laurie had disappeared back to Laurie's parents' house. Polly, Eleanor and their men had booked a holiday cottage called Slett's within walking distance of the Meaness Community Hall, and now the four of them sat outside it on white wooden chairs and watched the tide ebb. No background noise except the water and their own murmured conversation. The occasional echoing splash of wine being poured into large glasses. Polly felt the dizziness return and thought again that she'd had far too much to drink. She turned back to face her friends and realised they were in the middle of a conversation. "Did you see Laurie's cousins, Kitty?" The envy in Eleanor's voice was palpable. "Little Vela, only 4 weeks old." Eleanor was 36 and desperate for a baby. There'd been a late miscarriage and the child would have been a girl. None of them knew what to say. There was a long silence. "I saw something really weird when you were all out for a walk this afternoon," Eleanor went on, obviously deciding to change the subject. Perhaps she understood that talk of babies embarrassed them. "There was a young girl dancing on the beach. She was all in white, a kind of